is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin hour number two. It is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here, downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Our closer made it all the way back home. Mom says she's very happy to hear you made it. All those prayers were answered as you get that connecting flight and you make it back to Cleveland, Ohio in time for the show. Did you get enough sleep? Did you get Greg Peterson sleep, like intermittent kind of 4 hours here? And then maybe did you sleep in the plane, or were you like, no, I got to make sure I'm out of here right when this thing touches down so I can get off this plane?
The adrenaline, right? You know, just from running, and, you know, it probably took me a good 15 minutes just to finally, you know, get back. I'm not the elite athlete I once was, but, you know, it was, hey, all's well that ends well, man. It was a Carlos Alcaraz moment of not only making the connection,
yeah,
but getting my checked bag
That's like, the miracle.
I didn't have that parlay hitting yesterday. I would have been very happy with a push of me making it home, my bag getting here sometime today. That would have been a win to me. But here we are, buddy, back in the home studio. And guess what? Let's pack it all up again on Wednesday, and we'll see you in Omaha on Thursday and Friday.
By the way, that's going to be a lot of fun for the network. Everybody's going to be out there. I know, talking to Bill Ady this weekend, everybody's pretty excited, Jensen, about getting you out there. In our crews, obviously, Money Moves and Follow the Money in our show as well. So, again, Omaha this weekend for the College World Series. That's going to be a lot of fun. But hour number two, let's get to it, our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
I don't know if it's as big an upset as you cashing that connecting flight and checked bag, making it to Cleveland. But if you had the over last night, somehow that cashes as well. 123-107 is the final there. You have 5 points. I went back to the box score and looked in the final minute, and nobody quit there on either side. So you get the 230. Remember, the 100 points at halftime. So it looked like a dead under. The explosion of points in the second half here to get over that 228 total. If you laid the 11.5 with OKC, never really in doubt. SGA was spectacular again in this one here. Tyrese Haliburton at 17. If you just look at the box score, you go, oh, that's not too shabby. A lot of that was late. Again, I'm glad that Rick Carlisle played these guys. You're getting, you know, we're not going to have game three till Wednesday, so it's not about, you know, your legs. The epic comebacks they've had, just play these things out, and you just quite never know. Remember, they were down 15 in the fourth quarter of game one and came back and won. So they don't do that, and they lose by 16 here. But, Jensen, what's your takeaway now that we go to Indiana knotted up at one?
The Thunder back up off the mat, right? That second quarter kind of stands out to me as, okay, this is when we see the Thunder kind of putting the screws to the Pacer offense. Again, you do have that sense of urgency. You don't want to go down 0-2, especially at home. But I think overall, SGA being the MVP, right? Mm-hmm. Comes out, puts up 34. That's what you expect. Supporting cast was phenomenal. An unexpected 20 points from Alex Caruso.
Yeah.
18 from Aaron Wiggins. You know, again, that's what you and I kind of looked at in the Western Conference part of the bracket was there any team maybe outside of Denver that could have had a supporting cast to match your stars, Jokic and SGA might just cancel each other out, but would there be other people to be able to facilitate? Jalen Williams was pretty solid. So this is kind of what we expected, right? When the Thunder do what they're capable of doing, this is the kind of performance they can have. Now, fast forward here to Wednesday. We keep getting these weeks in between games. Adam Silver, clean it up. This is going to be one of those spots, too, where you know you're going to have the urgency and the emotion from the Pacers, right? That home crowd is going to be so into it. First finals game in forever there in Indianapolis. But I am interested to see what the Thunder do from a defensive standpoint coming out and how they try and limit Tyrese Haliburton, which they did a really good job of, Dave, here in game two.
Aaron Wiggins, too, big off the bench. He looked spectacular. 18 points there. Easy-looking jumper. So those two only had 14 points in game one. Caruso, you mentioned, with the 20. Jensen, I had a little nice 4-1, three-leg, same-game parlay. Caruso, 9.5 for more points. Bing, 20. Andrew Nembhard, I had him over 9.5 points as well. Bing, 14. I had Obi Toppin to round that out. 3 points, 1 of 8 shooting, and 1 of 5 from distance. So I got the volume I was looking for. Obi, Make a shot, dude. He could not get that done to get home. Sometimes those last legs can be a little bit difficult, but I mentioned I got a little bit lucky with that over hitting an SGA 29.5 or more points and over 7.5 assists. He had 8. So we barely got over the finish line in that one. Speaking of getting over the finish line, how about Carlos Alcaraz? An epic match for the ages on center court, Roland Garros. A 5-set thriller. And that's not really the story here. It's 328 minutes. That's how long this match went. And if you're the Italian Jannik Sinner, if you had the Italian Jannik Sinner, you probably already had mentally cashed that ticket, especially when it's triple match point in the fourth set, not set five, in the fourth set to win this thing in four. Alcaraz was 65-1 when facing those triple match points and came back to win the game, win the set, and then ultimately win the match. I will tell you this. You do this now, it's different majors do different things. Back in the day, Jensen, they played it out. Where the fifth, you didn't go to a tiebreaker in the fifth set. This one it does. And it was easy for Alcaraz once it got to that fifth set tiebreak. I kind of do miss the old days of like the Federer, and then we're talking about these Wimbledon matchups, these epic ones that would go on for eternity until you got a break in order to win that theoretically in the fifth and final set. But they're doing tiebreaks here. Alcaraz gets that done. And again, 0-2 to 3-2 to win this thing. There's never going to be another Nadal on clay, but Alcaraz, there's not that gap between he and Sinner, obviously, on any surface right now. But this has got to be his best surface here. I think if you're Sinner and you go, man, if I couldn't win this time around, I wonder what's going to be different down the road.
And also, too, you know, kind of the rivalry, right? You know, we've appreciated where, you know, Nadal and Djokovic and, you know, the idea is also, too, of where just tennis overall could use this kind of head-to-head. It remind me, and I'm pretty sure Gil talked about it, it's the first time that these two guys have faced in a Grand Slam final.
That's right.
I believe, or maybe even at all. But,
yep.
You know, bottom line here, you're still looking at, just from the athlete standpoint, you're not triple match point. Like you're staring up at the mountain without an O2 tank, and for Alcaraz to get up on his feet and climb all the way to the mountaintop, buddy. I don't know what the UFC equivalent for you and what you've seen would be like, just knowing you've got two heavyweights of the sport head to head, one guy's dominating and all of a sudden the other just comes back to do it. But this, as good a heavyweight tilt in tennis as we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, their first ever finals matchup. We hope that there's going to be many more for Sinner and Alcaraz, and it does kind of feel like this could be that 1-2. You kind of need this in tennis, I think. And certainly it goes back. And by the way, the second one now for Alcaraz's fifth slam title. Sinner still waiting to get his first here. But I will say this, 14 for Rafa Nadal on the French clay of Roland Garros, 2 for Carlos Alcaraz. So before anybody starts to go, we got the new king of clay. A little bit different in the way those kings got it done here. But, you know, it always was better for the sport, right? With Federer and Nadal, yeah. And then Djokovic, of course, maybe the best of the three in that big three. I hope this is a big two, at least even Sampras and Agassi. You got to have those foils historically. And maybe we've got one now with the Italian and with Alcaraz. Fantastic final there. Interesting here, and I wonder what your thoughts are here for highlights and headlines. Nick Chubb is gone in Cleveland. He's going to sign a one-year deal here with the Houston Texans. Now, I look at that and I go, we talked about it here in the program where Kevin Stefanski, and it looked like they just weren't going to be able to bring him back. And I'm like, why? Now, I know it didn't look good last year coming off the devastating injury from a year ago. Jensen, is this a case, I hate to say it, of damaged goods, and the Browns just felt like it was time to move on from Chubb?
I just think from a financial standpoint too, what it would have taken. And Chubb about as team first,
yep.
a star as you're going to find, especially in the NFL. And what a great buy low option here for Houston, right? If anything, an insurance policy to some extent for Joe Mixon, but also if you get both these guys healthy at the same time, mm-hmm. I mean, dear God, what does that offense look like? You bring in Christian Kirk, of course, go now with Nico Collins, and we hope that Tank Dell and his rehab is speedy and he can be back at some point this year. But Dalton Schultz, huge step forward as a go-to tight end there in big-time spots. And then, of course, C.J. Stroud looking for a little bounce-back campaign in his own right. So, yeah, Here in Cleveland, they're not winning anytime soon. And so why spend the money now to try and bring a guy back? Even though Nick Chubb would have taken a pay cut, it just did not make sense from a roster construction standpoint with where the Browns are in their progressions.
Yeah, I mentioned it, and we're excited about it. We'll break it down here as the weeks go here with these adjusted win totals here. Those came out over the weekend at Circa behind me as well. And the Texans are one of those interesting teams for me that I look at in the marketplace there as a team I might want to get invested in. I've told you numerous times here how impressed I was with them late season, even in defeat against Houston, against Kansas City in the postseason. I feel like for a team that's won the division 2 years in a row, they might be a lot better. If Chubb has anything left and he can pair with Mixon, who looks like he needs a little breather here and there, not the same guy that we saw in the Cincinnati days, I'm with you in the buy low spot here. I kind of really like this move, sneaky move for Houston. We'll see how that plays out as we get ready for the NFL season this year. Betting splits, you can get those. And I knew I was dead on a couple of those UFC 316 matchups as we're in real time and I'm hanging out with Matt Humans, Bill Ady. I'm like, I hate being on the public side. And I knew I was in a couple of those co-main and main events. And that's why the value of the betting splits here. You don't always want to be in that public side. $9.99, VSiN.com/subscribe. You'll see where the money is moving for all of these bouts, these fights. Certainly, even in golf, you can find all those betting splits there, not just the baseball, basketball, football that we always talk about. With those betting splits are available from DraftKings and, of course, Circa. So as little as $9.99 when you become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. When we come back, the Daily Diamond, fresh back from Carolina to Cleveland. Jensen Lewis, you're up next with our edition of our Daily Diamond.
The books right here on VSiN.
We are back, and I have Tyler Fulgham join us later on this hour to help break down the U.S. Open. We're going to have Will Hill join us for hour number two, talking NBA and beyond. And of course, Rachel Dorey is going to join the program previewing game three of the Stanley Cup Finals tonight. Daily Diamond coming right up. But Jensen, we do have some breaking news here, rather significant in the NFL, and that's that the Packers are going to be releasing their star corner, Jaire Alexander. You go back not that long ago, 15th overall pick here in the first round by the Packers. I know there was contract issues. He's an interesting guy. I think we could put that in air quotes. We remember when he made himself a team captain, even though he's not a team captain, went out there for the coin toss in Carolina. That became a big deal. He's not going to be out there long. Jensen, you know how this goes sometimes. Talent is one thing. It's going to take you very far. Can you play, right? But at some point, is this just a numbers move where the Packers said, we're tired of the headaches. He's going to be somebody else's headache, but he's going to be on somebody else's roster very soon.
Someone else's headache, nailed it. All right, so this is a team on the rise, right? Younger club that, you know, they feel from a defensive, you know, unit standpoint that they are in that next echelon, next couple of years to really be in a spot to complement an offense that, you know, if they didn't have the injuries to the receiver room last year at the end of the season, Dave, boy, what could have Jordan Love done with that group? And maybe they could have really made some inroads in the NFC postseason picture. So, yeah, I think this is very straightforward. We know that Matt LaFleur, big on culture. You can only allow the talent to overwhelm that so long. And then you're like, move on. We got plenty of other elite people that we can do here. And probably for a better financial situation, too, not only this year, but moving forward as well.
I'll tell you this, too. I think what it would do for a young football team that you're mentioning, with some other guys in the offensive side that have to grow up a little bit wide receiver-wise, not talking about attitude, just step up their play. I think if you're in that locker room today, you go, they cut Jaire? He gone? Like, I do think that's going to send a message of, like, we get it. Everybody's talented in this league, and some are really supremely talented like Jaire, but we're not going to put up with this stuff. It's time to grow up and be about what's on the football field. Interesting moves there in Green Bay. That's for sure. We'll see where Jaire Alexander lands. Let's get to it. Today's edition of the Daily Diamond. It's June. We get it. It's early. We understand. 162 of these things to play. But maybe, Jensen, a couple series beginning today could be for maybe a preview of what we might see come October.
All right, so I put the headline as NL supremacy, National League supremacy, because I do feel that the four teams we're going to talk about, and ironically, they do play each other beginning with series tonight. Let's start first with the Cubs and Phillies. We'll talk to Greg Peterson about how the Phillies have looked nothing like the earlier edition, the first couple of months when, particularly in May, they went on such a long win streak and really ascended to the top of not only the National League East, but maybe the National League as well. Cubs also a team that's been out to a quick start. They do have a lot of pros. They do have some shortcomings. So an interesting series gets underway tonight, potentially a postseason preview. Also, Big Brother, Little Brother, the latest iteration of this series between the Dodgers and the Padres. I don't think anyone, Dave, had on their bingo card at the beginning of the year that when we got here to June 9th, that the difference between the Dodgers and the Padres is a single game. And oh, by the way, objects in the rearview mirror way closer than they appear, because the San Francisco Giants are now level with the Padres, just a game behind the Dodgers. So a three-team race, maybe not the three teams we expected, but certainly the Padres and the Dodgers, another great series to get underway. And yes, we could see these teams matching up again in October.
Didn't see the Mets in the graphic because they don't play today. So, no offense taken. We totally understand that. And we're picking up what you're putting down. How about maybe some longer shots to make some runs here in both the American and the National League?
All right. So, we kind of look at this on a weekly basis, just maybe as our own little mini stock up, stock down.
Yeah.
And I added a few more teams on the American League side, Dave, because I think you and I have agreed from the beginning it is still incredibly wide open. And there are some teams here that maybe have not performed to their capabilities. I'm going to circle the Red Sox first, and then we'll go to the Rangers here, because those two teams, 4 and 4.5 games respectively, out of a playoff spot. You just feel at those prices, those teams are too good and too talented, right? And again, the Red Sox have their warts. They have their issues from an injury standpoint. Without Bregman, the lineup continuity remains a real mystery to Alex Cora and company. The Rangers still have yet to hit, man. I would have far more faith in the Rangers than the Braves at identical prices, just because we know what the National League landscape is. Let me go to the teams in the middle. We mentioned the Rays, and they have just quietly put together a really nice 20-game stretch here. 7-3 also in their last 10. They right now would be in the postseason as a wild card team if the playoffs started today. I don't have the Blue Jays in there just yet because I don't know if the offense has staying power. It might. And then the Guardians, just because I don't know how the hell they're doing it, Dave, but they're doing it. They're still here. I don't think they have anywhere near the offensive staying power as the rest of those teams on the left side. And then I threw the Diamondbacks just for this idea. Corbin Burns done for the year, we know that. But this front office has shown that they can be aggressive when they need to, and maybe this is a deadline deal team to keep an eye on. But I thought this would be a very fun list to kind of look at this point. Everyone kind of catch their breath. We're 60-plus games into the season, and still some really appetizing prices for teams yet to kind of hit their stride, particularly in the Red Sox and the Rangers.
We're back. It's amazing how much things change from our last conversation over a weekend for odds on favorites. We're back to 6 odds on favorites to win the divisions, but a different team now. Houston is now odds on at $1.55.
Crazy.
I'm stunned by that. You mentioned the Rangers are 7-1 to come back there. The Mariners now 2-1. The other one is the Mets now. They've pulled away 4.5 game lead over Philadelphia. They're minus 225, almost big as the Cubs at minus 235 here. So we're seeing some shifts there. But the Dodgers, even with that competition, as you mentioned, minus 475 to still win that division. It's amazing. Giants game back plus 850. You mentioned the Padres there, 8-1. Okay, you're going to be going to Omaha. We're going to Omaha as a network here. Tell us about those teams on Omaha and maybe some odds to win the whole kit and caboodle.
All right. So I, for the first time since 1999, Dave, we have 4 of the top 5 national seeds that are out.
Wow.
That will not make it. The only top 5 national seed is the Arkansas Razorbacks. They sweep the defending champion Tennessee Volunteers 2-Q. They're in Fayetteville. So they are your odds on favorite. LSU dispatching of West Virginia late last night. Those are the two teams I think many people felt coming in were the deepest and potentially the best. Now, the irony, they get to lock horns in the first game on their side of the bracket. So one of those teams is going to have to try and come out of the loser's bracket, and maybe both those teams will match up for the right to go to the College World Series final. The other side of it is absolute chaos, Dave. I told you I saw Arizona come back after getting the doors blown off them in game one in Chapel Hill. I know Mike Palm has a very juicy futures ticket on the Wildcats. Steve Cohen, the Jefe, the alma mater, is going to find its way there. No rumor yet on how many shots that Rocco's will facilitate to Mr. Cohen there in support of Arizona. Louisville, and looking at just where the ACC had potential to have upwards of four teams in, Louisville right now, the only representative from the ACC. UCLA is a Big Ten representative is in. Oregon State beat the brakes off of Florida State yesterday. That's a fascinating team. And then Coastal Carolina, 23 or 24 consecutive wins, Dave. Longest active win streak in the country, and they have some arms, man. If you're looking for a fun team to back, a fun team to watch, Coastal and Arizona match up in their first game on their side of the bracket. So still one spot to be decided. Murray State and Duke with the winner take all tonight from Durham. But man, buddy, we are going to have a very diverse field. This is very much a bracket buster field, but also with a couple of behemoths there in Arkansas and LSU.
Again, there they are, the SEC at the top of the board, but not as deep as we thought potentially that could be there, right, for the
yes,
SEC?
Correct.
If you had to go SEC or the field, what would you do?
I would probably stay there. I thought Arkansas would be that one team. And, okay, and yes, LSU offensively and from a back end of the bullpen would be okay. If you're looking for a long shot right now, I mean, Arizona is riding high, and they have probably two really dynamic arms. Casey Hintz and Tony Pluta, your nation's leader in saves right now, has not given up an earned run since I think the first week in April. It's just been unbelievable the stretch that Arizona has been on.
Fascinating. You mentioned it. It's going to be at the world-renowned Rocco's in Omaha. We're going to be there as a network here coming up this week, Thursday through Saturday, right there from Rocco's, the iconic home of that Jello Shot Challenge. So catch money moves, follow the money. Jensen, you'll be there for us as well. Sights and signs of the big bets from the tournament as well. Mike Palm's going to be there. Bill Ady, we got Steve Cohen, as you mentioned. Our big week's going to all be out there. So if you're in the area, come by and say hi to some of your favorite VEASAN people, both on and off the air as well. It's going to be a lot of fun out there in Omaha. Jensen, hopefully you're going to have easier travels than you had this past week, and I'm sure you will, because we're road tripping, baby. It's VEASAN in Omaha. When we come back, adjusted win totals are out. We'll break down a couple right here in the NFL.
VEASAN by the books, right here on VEASAN.
We are back, VEASAN by the books here. It's early June, Jensen Lewis, but it feels like Christmas in June when you get win totals have been out. But now we start to get fancy with it. And now pretty much across the board, you can find adjusted win totals. Those came out this weekend here. Jeffrey Benson and the crew here at Circa put theirs up. And so the ones that we are going to show you will be the numbers associated with Circa Sports here. And again, they're branching out. It's not just here in Vegas. You can find these certainly in Illinois and soon in Kentucky as well. So check your books, because some of these places, the numbers will be different. So again, one of the due diligence as a gambler, you have to find the best of those numbers for similar markets that are going to be out there. So these are going to be the numbers here at Circa. Let's start off with the NFC West today on these adjusted win totals. And it does feel like this division could be a little bit in flux if we believe that San Francisco, who obviously were riddled with injuries last year, did not win the division. That went by the way of the Rams. And for a time in December, Jensen, you could have made a case for all four teams down the stretch they come, like the Belmont Stakes. You could have picked any one of those four, and I wouldn't have necessarily been mad at you. The injuries are too much for the Niners to overcome. Seattle looked like they had a really good shot to win this thing. Arizona actually had the lead to begin the month, and it was the Rams that were the horse that came down the stretch. So now, when you look at the adjusted win totals, if you think this is an 11-win team for the Rams as the reigning defendings, you get plus money at plus $1.55. okay? And I think what we're getting at here is this going to be a bunched division? Because the odds would state that it is when you look at just who's going to win those divisions. And this is one of those that's pretty tightly bunched. Seattle is the longest shot of the four. But when I look at this division, I don't want to say it's a coin flip, Jensen, but I do think it's going to be very, very hard to handicap which one of these adjusted win totals over you might be willing to hop on.
All right, so there are a handful here. Let's start with the Rams, where you went first. The over 10.5 plus $1.55, very intrigued about. You get Devontae Adams there, boost the ceiling a little bit. Is he worth a win? Potentially he could be. And also just knowing that, is it four AFC games, AFC South games, if I remember correctly, that they get a little bit weaker division there? Off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember what their schedule was. But by and large, that number at plus 155 for the adjusted win total felt pretty good. Also, the Niners, I know you and I talked about it as well. Are they flying under the radar here? Is Brock Purdy worth all the money? We're about to find out. Conservatively, the over 10.5 feels like a pretty easy play, but I do like the plus 220 for them to get 12 or more. Remember, we talked about potentially who could get that number one seed in the NFC, and felt that the Niners, the Rams, at least in this division, could challenge the Eagles, the Packers, the Lions as potential teams that could get there. If I do count correctly, Rams open right with the Texans, yep, then at the Titans, mm-hmm, Colts. So you got a pretty favorable, and then the neutral site, excuse me, there with the Jags in London. So you get four AFC South teams, and by all intents and purposes, Dave, I mean, they should win three of those. And you should be able to beat the rookie quarterback on the road in week two. You should handle business against the Colts at home in week four. And then you'll kind of, we'll see what happens over there at Tottenham and London against the Jags. So I think those are the two that stand out. Let me throw it back to you, because I'm intrigued your thoughts on the Cardinals and the Seahawks. I think you and I both like the Cardinals upside.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of that late game execution. Can Gannon and company find a way to really allow this offense to take hold, to do what they have to do? And then, you and I have said, all right, there's better teams to buy, or there's worse teams to buy upside-wise than the Seahawks, knowing what they have there. And I think we're kind of really looking forward to seeing what this iteration of that offense now with Sam Darnold and company looks like.
You went right to where I wanted to go, and that is in the Pacific Northwest here with Seattle. And the adjusted win total there of 8.5 at plus money feels very doable to me. Now, here's the interesting thing about this division. You kind of nailed it there, Jensen. I like this division, like top to bottom. I think these are four good football teams. So does that translate to they beat each other up in the division, but they're really good out of the division? And that's where some of these adjusted win totals could hit for multiple teams, because you mentioned it, right? You go out of the division for this team. We'll see what Seattle, or what the Steelers look like now with Aaron Rodgers in. You're going to be able to play the Saints at home. That feels like a good spot there. You do have to play Jacksonville. We'll see if Liam Cohen has those guys up and ready in the road. Feels like a decent spot there. You got that Week 12 matchup in Tennessee. How good are they going to be as one of the worst teams from a year ago? So outside of the division, which could be very, very tough, you got another road game. The road games look doable for Seattle. If you look at the Panthers, if you look at the Titans, if you look at the Jaguars, even the Colts coming into the Pacific Northwest. So I feel like there's spots for Seattle to pick up games out of the division. But I think in the division, if Sam Darnold, like, what version of Sam are we getting? This was a big play on team for me a year ago in Minnesota, and we cashed all those laddered adjusted win totals there. And that was a play on Kevin O'Connell and Sam Darnold. I like Mike McDonald. I think he's a really good young coach in the league, coming over from the John Harbaugh tree in Baltimore. Like, to me, Jensen, I think that adjusted win total, I think this could be potentially a 10-win football team. Am I nuts for thinking that?
No, and that's why I think this division, too, might be one of the upside divisions to back, right? Just knowing where that Seahawks schedule is. I mean, early on here, yes, you get a couple of early tests, having the Niners and then having to go to Pittsburgh. But then you get the Rams. And then also, if that offense does come together maybe a bit earlier than anticipated, you and I both know Seattle, one of the great home field advantages in all of the National Football League, regardless of what team is coming in there. So it's not far-fetched whatsoever, my man, to look at. I don't know if every team gets to 10 wins, but it's very much a potential reality, just knowing the caliber and the talent that all four of those teams will have.
And it's nuts to me that alt win total for Seattle, because remember, over 7.5 is pretty much what you're seeing market-wide, is minus $1.50, but the 8.5 is where that's the alt number at plus $1.35. And I'm like, wow, like I need an alt. I need a double alt. I need a Carol alt. I need a 9.5. Give me that one. I'd love to see what that looks like. It's going to be well into the $2 territory there if you think this is a 10-win football team here for Seattle. But yeah, like you look at the number there for Arizona to get to 10 or more. Like I would not be that adventurous that's a 10-win football team. I don't know that I think I like that. I will say this, at 8.5, where their flat number is at minus $1.10, juiced either way at 8.5. I think that's a good, fair number either way. That's probably why I wouldn't get involved in the Cardinals, because I think that number is perfect.
I agree. And I think the early returns of this division, the first 4, maybe 5 weeks, yeah, I just put my survivor hat on here. Like there are opportunities to strike. And then also knowing, as I said, you're going to have, barring just significant injury, you would feel that all four of these teams well into the playoff hunt, even halfway through this season. I tell you what, it could end up being one of those most competitive divisions in the entire NFC, without a doubt.
You know, we're talking about in baseball terms, we were just looking at, we've got six odds on favorites to win those divisions, right? If you go back a year ago, and I did hop in around Thanksgiving, I think it was, on Seattle at 6-1. And boy, I looked like a genius for a while there until the last week of the right. They get right there on the precipice. I wonder if this is one of those, if you don't have a position early, these numbers could jockey around as the year goes, right? Do you see it being as competitive? And I know the Niner backers are going to go, that's because we were banged up. Well, you're still counting on guys that get banged up. You're still counting on Trent Williams. You're still counting on Christian McCaffrey, right? Debo is gone. Not walking through. Brandon Ayuk. So you're counting on guys that have been injured to not be injured this year and say we're going to run away with the division. I think even at fully strength San Francisco, this, I don't want to know if it's a four-horse race, but I do feel like everybody's going to have a say at some point. I don't see a 5-12 football team in this division.
No, I don't. And that's why I said, unless a quarterback gets hurt and is done for a significant time, you would envision that a lot of opportunities to maybe win some close games with some of the defenses you have there. And as I said, I think you look at those alt win totals, especially for the Niners and for the Rams, and potentially getting that number one seed in the NFC.
Going to be fascinating. What a great division, potentially. Maybe not the best when it comes to records, but just jumbled up there, beating each other up. That's going to be a really, really tough division this year in the NFC West. Okay, you want to come out west, come out to Las Vegas, because a great, and I do mean great, summer package is going on right now at Circa. If you go to CircaLasVegas.com, you're going to get a $400 all-in price. This offer is going to go through September 4th. So we're in football season, baby. So right there, what does that $400 get you? 2 nights stay here at Circa. That is going to include your resort fees and taxes. And those, when you come out, they are not cheap. $100 dining credit, $100 beverage credit, a day bed at Stadium Swim. Put some lotion on, people, because it's hot out here. So again, CircleLasVegas.com. That's $400 all in, 2 nights stay. That's as good as a summer package as you're going to get. Let's talk some golf, people. That's next here, VSiN by the Book.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
In by the Books on this Monday edition, and have Will Hill, Rachel Dory join us in hour number 3, talking NBA and NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. Obviously, we got game 3 tonight down in Sunrise, Florida. Can't wait to break down that matchup in fuller detail as we've been going on throughout the program. But it's our Open, baby. It's the U.S. Open. I know over there, when we get to Portrush, they call it the Open, right? we say the British Open. And if you say that over there, Jensen, it's like nails on a chalkboard, right? They bristle at it like, we're the oldest championship. But our United States Open, I think what separates it out of the other four, and everyone's got their, you know, the PGA and the Masters, of course, and the British Open, all of them have their own characteristics. But the one about ours, if you will, here, it's always the talk of the USGA and the course setup. We're going to have Rex Hager join us tomorrow from Oakmont. So stay tuned for that conversation. He'll be on the grounds there. So a lot of the talk this week leading up to it is going to be about the setup at Oakmont. I've already heard it, Jensen. It's too hard. They're setting it up. It's too difficult. It's too punitive. If you hit in the rough, should they cut down the... No. This is what makes it different. This is why the U.S. Open, as they say, is the ultimate test of golf every year. So I don't have any problem with tough course conditions in a tough setup, right? Like, do you have any issue with that? That you're going to hear it from some players, like, oh, it's not fair. Like, just go be better. And I don't care if the winning score is over par. That's the test this week. You kind of that you accommodate what the course is asking you to do.
Thank you. Okay, there's a reason why we have this particular major as the toughest test in golf.
Absolutely.
I mean, I remember hearing that, and you know what you're signing up for.
Yes.
Okay. If you don't want to play it, if you think it's too hard, skip the damn tournament. All right. We don't need you. We've got plenty of guys that are out there like, yeah, it's going to be really tough. Yeah, I can't even see my ball, you know, and, you know, the grass is covering my shoes up to my ankles.
Mm.
Great. I got news for you. Guess what? Don't hit it in the damn rough. Like, hey, hello. I love this tournament in and of itself because it humanizes the game.
Yes.
It makes us feel like, you know what? We're not that bad. Okay, when these guys are hacking, I got to take my weed whacker in the yard to be able to find some of these things the way they do out there. I'm with you, man. I cannot stand the excuses from some of these guys when you already know this is what it's about. All right, and the USGA wants to find their little tweaks and upping the degree of difficulty every year. Dave, it's fine with me.
Yeah.
If the winning score is even par, fine. This is what this particular major has always been about.
Agreed. Couldn't say it better. It's a perfect sentiment. I could not agree more. I will say this. There are interesting markets out there, and I want to get into some of these. Obviously, Scotty's the short number on the board of plus 275. You got to lay almost 2-1, $1.75 to make the top five. Rory is still the second guy on the board. Remember, 9 over par in 2 rounds at the RBC this weekend. It's hard to miss the fairways there, and he did. If he does that at Oakmont this week, and this is what I'm getting at, there are make miss the cuts numbers out there. Now, obviously correlated, when Scotty and Rory are 1 and 2 in the odds board to win the tournament, they're going to be the longer shots to miss the cut. Now, Rory McIlroy is plus $3 to miss the cut at Oakmont. I'll just say, Jensen, I don't think that's a terrible bet. I expect him to make the cut. I do.
Right.
But if he is this far off with, and I know it's a non-story that is a story. They want to make it a non-story. That's why they buried a quote-unquote non-story. Why'd you bury a non-story? The driver face. Whatever's happened since that story came out, he has not been the same guy. Whether that's happenstance, coincidental, I don't know. But what I do know is the numbers bear it out. And he's not driving the ball accurately. Like, I would be stunned. And by the way, Scottie Scheffler to miss the cut is plus 725. He ain't missing the cut, people. He's not missing the cut. Like, I don't see a scenario like that happening, that the course just neutralizes the best players in the world and we get all these upstarts that we're not thinking of that are going to now be the names we talk. I don't think that's going to be the case at a United States Open. So I don't know that I'd like to play that long number at over 7-1 that Scotty misses a cut. But I will tell you this. The two guys I'd look at, if you want to play a long number, and I know it's like in roulette, I guess this would be the don't pass line that you'd be playing. would be Bryson at plus 340 and Rory at 3-1. Like, I look at those two guys as massive hitters, but man, can they spray it all over God's green earth.
Yep. I love it. And so again, you know, we've kind of harped on already, you need guys that are going to be able to keep it straight and are going to have incredible iron play if they do get into the rough and have to be as good a scrambler in recent form as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to factor that. Are some guys mentally equipped to deal with the course conditions of what they and we can cross some guys off, the highly emotional guys. I told you about Rombo.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Spaniard can lose it at any point here.
He can run hot.
But I tell you, you know, for that price, you know, mention Xander at a top five, top 10 market, Morikawa. I know we keep going back to that well, and at some point I think it finally gets fruitful. That's why I came down to Justin Thomas.
Hmm.
You know, for a guy that should have, he should have the mettle and the resolve to know and have the awareness like, hey, everyone out here is dealing with this. Let's just kind of keep it close and then be able to fire. Because if someone can dial it in and keep it straight, JT has the opportunity to do that. So I think we're in a unique spot and anxious to get some reports from on the ground. Not only, okay, how ridiculously high is the rough, but, you know, hey, this is if you shoot straight, if you keep the ball in regulation, you have a great chance to win this tournament.
We're going to have Matt Humans on as we do on Tuesdays. He will not be taking Colin Morikawa this week. I can guarantee you that I think Matt, it's kind of like, I will say this, like, if you just looked at it statistically, Tommy Fleetwood, British Jesus, as we like to say, at 35 yep. to 1, is a straight, he hits it straight, man. Like, he hits it long, he hits it straight. You would feel like this would be a spot for him to be in. Could I interest you in this market? Winner without market. So obviously you're going to take out Scotty. It's going to take out Rory. So I don't know that I'm getting the same value there because I'm not looking at Rory to be in play this week for me on my card at those numbers. Bryson DeChambeau could be that ultimate wild card. And also you mentioned him. It's John Rahm. That's the fourth mm-hmm. guy at DraftKings right now that they list in the winner without. So you take out Rombo, you take out Rory, you take out Scotty, you take out Bryson. Those are the top four guys on the odds board. And then you get Xander Schauffele at 12-1. That's where he's the first number on the winner without market. Morikawa is 14-1. You mentioned the big Swede. Ludwig, you'd be getting him at 18-1. Jocko, Joaquin Niemann at 18-1. And there's your Justin Thomas at 22-1 and Fleets at 20-1. Would those be better markets to get in? So I don't worry about Tommy Fleetwood finally winning a golf tournament. Now I just have to make sure he's out of that Rory, Bryson, Rahm, and Scheffler. Any of those four guys win and Tommy's there next, I still cash that 20-1.
Yeah. You know, okay, so on DraftKings, winner without Rory, Bryson, Rombo, and Scheffler.
Right?
I think, I was talking Justin Thomas up here just a moment ago. He's at 22-1.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it almost cut it in half, but, you know, I don't have to outrun, you know, some of those big guys. I mentioned Tyrrell Hatton for you, too. He's at 25-1 there. Shane yep. Lowry, 25-1. If you have any belief whatsoever in the straight shooter of Patrick Cantlay at 25-1, Victor Hovland's 30-1. I think that might be the way to go. You know, we'll have Wednesday with Wes, but that might be one of those opportunities here where if everything kind of breaks your way, you get the 2-for-1, right? You don't have to worry about the big dogs and you get the straight shot home.
I will tell you this too. You mentioned him. I'm glad you brought him up too. First time we said Shane Lowry's name. Boy, is he playing good golf, and boy, does he hit it straight. So, like, Lowry could be another one of those guys. If he, again, sometimes not the longest guy out there, but long enough. So, if you want to look at some of those Euros, I think Fleets in a winner without market and or Lowry, not bad names to have. Hovland is very interesting to me because when he's on, he's straight. We've seen him be a little bit frayed from time to time, but certainly the talent level for a guy like Hovland, if we're looking for non-Americans, that would be there as well. Right now, again, we got a great deal. We keep telling you guys, football season, it's right around the corner. I mean, it is almost here. So no better time than the present. VSiN.com/subscribe. $41 off your annual subscription by using the promo code book title of this show. And again, Josh Applebaum, his book, you're going to get a special free pre-order of NFL Sharp Betting Playbook from Josh. So if you want to bet smarter, you're going to get access to our VSiN Watch app, wherever you are. That betting guide's coming out July 1st. It's going to be here before you know it. Check it out now, VSiN.com/subscribe. The King of Connecticut is next. Will Hill on the other side of a very short break.